Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Welcome back to Hack the Entrepreneur. Again, I am so glad that you decided to join me again today. My name is John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. Today's guest is from Phoenix, Arizona, and was raised in a family of entrepreneurs. He attended the McGuire Center for Entrepreneurship at the University of Arizona, where he came up with an innovative business idea, subscription-based coffee, and he called it MistoBox. Before graduating, he and his co-founder, Samantha, launched a successful Kickstarter campaign where he received the initial $9,000 in funding to start the business. This was April 2012. They began operations in July of that same year. My guest and his partner recently took MistoBox onto the TV show Shark Tank. This is a tough show to get onto and even a tougher place to get funding. They received a $75,000 boost from serial entrepreneur Mark Cuban himself. That is impressive. Now, let's hack Connor Riley. I want to thank today's awesome sponsor, FreshBooks. Not only for sponsoring Hack the Entrepreneur, but also for personally helping me fix one of my biggest problems. I am absolutely terrible at staying on top of my bookkeeping and accounting for my business. Now, rather than losing receipts and handing my accountant a giant box of papers at the end of the year, FreshBooks has an amazing app for my phone that lets me instantly take pictures of my receipts and sort them with the touch of a single button. FreshBooks is designed for small business owners and is the number one cloud accounting solution that helps millions of entrepreneurs and small business owners to save time and get paid faster. FreshBooks integrates directly with three things that I use every day in my business: PayPal, Stripe, and MailChimp. To start your 30-day free trial today, go to freshbooks.com/hack. And don't forget to enter Hack the Entrepreneur in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Okay, we are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur, and again, another amazing entrepreneur. Connor, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Okay, Connor, let's get right into this. As an entrepreneur, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
That's a good question. So I would say the one thing that I've done and the contributing factors to the success that we've received so far, honestly, has been just the amount of work that we've put in. Both my business partner, Sam, and I have really been grinding for like probably the past 2 years, working far more than a normal 40-hour work week, and had to more or less make up as an underfunded business, you know, having a job of 4 to 5 people. Just between the two of us, I would say that that's been the biggest contributing factor, the fact that we're grinding away at work and being extremely efficient, extremely productive. Would be the biggest things, the biggest contributing factors that we have had on the business.
Just grinding away and going for it when you have to, right?
Grinding away, yeah.
There's not really much else you can do.
Exactly.
As you start up a business, I don't think. Yeah.
It's a grind.
It is. Okay, so let's go back to when this whole entrepreneur thing started for you. I've realized that there's a time in every entrepreneur's life when they realize one of two things. Either they have a calling to make a difference and make a change in the world, or they honestly just realize they can't work for someone else.
Right.
Can you tell me which one of these two is you and when this happened for you?
Yeah, I would say it started out with, I just didn't want to work for anybody else. And as I've gotten into it a little bit more, it's kind of now a little bit of both. I definitely don't want to work for anybody else. And at the same time, I also want to be able to make a difference and be able to create products, solutions, whatever it may be that people are going to enjoy, that's going to make people's lives better and people's lives easier. So I'd say it's kind of a combination of both, but it really just started out as not wanting to work for somebody else. So pretty much my whole entire life, I've always been doing something entrepreneurial. Like as a kid, jumping into golf course lakes, picking out golf balls, washing them, selling them on eBay, to painting citrus trees in Arizona, to selling baseball cards on the street corner. Like it's something that I've always done. always been able to come up with a creative way to try and make money. And then when I went to college, I went to the University of Arizona for the entrepreneurship program with the mindset that no matter what it was that I was doing, when I graduated from college, I was going to start a business. And luckily enough, the school project and the entrepreneurship program happened to be in East of Oxford. When we graduated, we were getting a ton of good feedback. So pretty much launched us straight into the company. Like, never really applied for a job, never really even considered working for somebody else. Just always had the mindset that that's the way it was going to be, is if I was going to do something, because I didn't want to work for somebody else. And now it's kind of morphed into that on top of wanting to be able to make a difference.
Wow. That's impressive. I've never actually heard of University of Phoenix entrepreneurship program.
Yeah, University of Arizona.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, sorry. University of Arizona. University of Phoenix, I've heard of. I've heard of the University of Arizona. I just didn't know they had an entrepreneurship program.
Yep.
That's really cool. I don't think a lot of schools actually have that.
Yeah, it was an awesome experience.
So what's the difference, would you see, like, between, say, a business degree and going to entrepreneurship? Like, what do they focus you on differently?
Good question. So we focus, it was a course that you took over your senior year. It was a 2-semester program, and it was about pretty much a full course load for both semesters. And they focused on, like, new venture marketing, so doing market research, internet marketing, things like that. They did startup finance, so they taught you how to do financial modeling for projecting, like, growth, revenue, margins, market size, things like that. And then there was also an entrepreneurial course where they teach you how to, you know, come up with a business model, validate a business, create a business plan, create a pitch deck, be able to project how much money you're going to need, you know, where that money is going to take you, the different metrics like cost, customer acquisition, the lifetime value of a customer, things like that. Things that are more specific directly towards starting a business rather than trying to set you up with the skill set to go work for somebody else.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's because it's weird, because always looking at it, I never went to business school, but it seems like it's setting you up to be like a high level manager or something. Or
I completely agree. Yeah. And it's
always confused me. I was like, it's not business.
the way that the education system works is definitely like that. Like, they try and teach you a skill set that's going to put you into a position that's going to be, you know, going to increase the odds of you getting a job at some sort of company doing an entry level position. And then, you know, they put in your mind that from there, you're going to work your way up the ladder. And that's just the way life's going to be. They definitely teach you things that are specific to working for another company rather than letting you think creative and do something on your own. So I certainly agree, like, without a doubt, like, what you learn, what I learned in the entrepreneurship program and what I've learned since just starting my own business has been, like, leaps and bounds better than what you can learn in school and a lot more fun.
Excellent. If you had to go back and start Misto Box, your company, today, what would you do differently?
I would say, honestly, I would remain more focused on what it is that we do and only do that and do it really well. When we got started, there were so many different things that we wanted to do and so many different ideas that we had that we tried to do way too much with way too little. And as a result, like, we did a ton of things okay, but nothing great. So now we've kind of scaled back on the things that we're doing and just hyper-focused on, like, 1, 2, 3 things. And that's where we're putting all of our time and attention. And we're going to do these 3 things better than anybody else can possibly do them. So I would say if I had to go back and start it today, I would just be more focused and just nail down 1, 2, 3 different things that you want to do and things that you want to do better than anybody else, what it is that you are absolutely best at, and that's the only thing that you should be doing.
Very well said. Very well said. All right, Connor, let's move to work. So I'm assuming you have, like, office and stuff at this point where you work out of and the company runs from?
So, yeah, but I mean, that's another thing. So, like, when we started, for about the first 2 years, we did have an office. We had an office in Phoenix, Arizona, that we worked out of. And it basically just got to the point where we didn't really see the purpose of having an office. So we do all of our fulfillment outsourced. So we don't have any warehousing. We don't do any shipping. It's all outsourced to fulfillment centers or just drop ship directly from different coffee roasters. So there's really no need for us to have a physical location. So about 6 months ago, it was April. So about 7 months ago in April, we just said, we're done with the office space. We're just going to kind of work remotely. And now we have people working from each of us in four different states, and we all just work basically from wherever we want to work. And as long as we're all, you know, have our computer and have the internet, like, we can be, in my opinion, more productive than if we were on the same location.
Oh, wow. And I totally agree with you. Not the answer I was expecting, though. That's very cool.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, no, and that's another thing, like, when we first started the business, like, you have these visions in your head and, like, these dreams of having this beautiful, cool office with, like, all these people that are there working for you. And it's really not as cool as it actually seems initially. You know, it sucks up a lot of time, and it sucks up also a lot of money. It's really not necessary.
Yeah, exactly. No, a lot of time and a lot of money. But it's one of those things that when you start, sometimes you feel that you need to do, right? I think we all fall into that trap of, whether it's offices or how we act.
Yeah, we got the office because we felt like that's what we should do rather than that's what we actually wanted to do, or that's what was best.
It's a good thing to learn. It's impressive that you learned it, though, too. Not everybody does. Some people just would let it kill their business.
Exactly. Yeah. It's another thing that I would go back and change if we could go back and start the business today, is just run the business remotely and do it the way that we're doing it. We all stay in touch. We use some different chat software and, like, to-do list or task list softwares that keeps everybody connected, so everybody knows what everybody's doing at any point in time. You can chat with anybody. You can video chat with anybody. You can assign somebody to do something. They can assign you to do something. And it honestly works better. There's less distraction. It's more efficient. And then we do, like, quarterly retreats where all of us will fly out to some location every quarter, all get together for about 3-4 days. Just crank out a ton of work, have a good time, and then we're back on our way. So we see each other about 4 times a year.
Very cool. Okay, so you work independently of your team, yet you have a team that you're running.
Correct.
So today is a work day. Can you walk us through, say, the first 30 minutes of your work day that sets you up to be productive now without an office and working and keeping your team going?
Yeah, so honestly, like, the first 30 seconds of my day, consist of getting coffee, getting food, and sitting at my computer and just, like, catching up on news and catching up on my emails. So I try and I normally do this at home, or I'll do it at the gym. I'll get some food, get some coffee, just clear out all my emails, get caught up on what I've missed over the past 12 to 14 hours while I've been, you know, asleep or not near my computer, see what's going on. And then by the time I get into the office, it's like the only thing I'm doing is the work that I have on my schedule for that day. I don't have to worry about getting into my inbox, answering emails, you know, doing those types of things. There's no distractions. It's all about just knocking off the list and getting into the groove and being able to, you know, put 6, 7, 8 productive hours into the day rather than, you know, 12, 13 unproductive hours.
Yeah. And are you working from home now, or do you go to, like, a co-working space or a coffee shop typically?
So we work from a co-working space. So Sam and I actually live in San Francisco, and we work together probably, like, 3 of the 5 days of the week, just out of a co-working space in San Francisco. And then, like, right now I'm in Arizona. I'm here for about 3 weeks, just where I'm from, where my family is. So I came out here for about 3 weeks, and then I'll go back to San Francisco for a couple and then come back here again. So I kind of bounce back and forth and constantly traveling. But when I am in San Francisco, Sam and I normally get together at a co-working spot that we get to downtown.
Excellent. Okay, Connor, let's move to struggles and failures. As entrepreneurs and as humans in general, one of our greatest struggles is the fear of being wrong, making mistakes, and failing.
Right.
Can you think back to a time in your business where you were completely wrong about something, and tell us how you got through it so that, say, the next day you weren't just still down about it and you could just move on and carry on what you needed to do in your business?
This is a good one. Let me think here. So a time when I failed or essentially been wrong about something.
Yeah, you made a...
And then what I've done it forward.
You made a call as the boss, and it was completely wrong. And you have to fess up to that, right? You have to still work through it. And you have to be willing to be confident the next time again. But it's a hard thing to do.
Yeah, so that... trying to get through the bad mistakes I've made over there, because I mean, there's always, anytime you're starting a business, there's going to be a series of bad mistakes you make. But I would say that the biggest mistake that we made was about 18 months ago, about a year and a half ago. So for every single, like, subscription box that we send out, or every bag of coffee that we send out to a customer, there's, like, a printed insert and a label that's applied to each bag. And we were just having it done by a print shop here in Phoenix and applying them ourselves and then sending them out the door. And I thought it would be a good idea to buy a $12,000 printer and start doing this printing yourself to save, you know, 4 or 5 or 6 cents per label, 4 or 5 or 6 cents per insert. We'd print them all out here. You know, we'd save a couple $100 a month at the scale that we were at the point, at that point in time. We got the machine financed, and, you know, I thought it was going to be an awesome idea, and it turned out the thing was just a terrible purchase. It was constantly breaking, constantly not working. It was more work than it was worth. And it's actually still sitting in an office here in Phoenix. We haven't used it in a year, and we're still making monthly payments on it. So I would say that's definitely the biggest failure. From this point forward, we've learned that, you know, be the best at outsource it.
Nice.
You know, all printing, we're not good at printing, so we shouldn't be printing. You know, don't spend money on things unless it's absolutely necessary, unless it's something you think it's going to, you know, bring immense value to the business, and it is within your core competency.
Excellent. And so that's core competency as a company. And so as an individual and as a person, we're always told now that the whole 80-20 rule, right? Focus on what you're good at, your core competency, and delegate all of the rest. Connor, can you tell me something that you are absolutely not good at?
Yes, I am not good at creating. I'm not very good at content. So creating blog posts, designing emails, pretty much anything that's like user facing in terms of design and the content that's created within that is definitely not my strength. I leave all that stuff up to Sam, who's awesome at it. So that's why it's such a good fit.
Nice. But you see, I guess, the value of creating good content these days.
Yeah, it's extremely valuable.
Excellent.
Like I know good content from bad content and good design from bad design, but I can't come up with it myself.
That's a good thing to know.
Yep, exactly.
Right? You got to learn these things.
Yeah, you have to know what you're good at, and you have to know what you're not good at, and you have to make sure that you're only doing the things that you're best at, and things that you're not best at, leave to somebody else to do, and trust that they're going to do it, you know, better than you, and they're going to do an awesome job at it. You don't have to worry about whether or not it's getting done, whether or not it's getting done right. Just the team does all of the design and all of the content. I don't even really look over it. I just know that she's going to put something awesome out there every single time. It's a whole nice thing on my plate to have to think about, and, you know, allows us to get that much more done. So all of that stuff, I don't even touch. Sam controls all of that stuff, and it's been working out awesome for us thus far.
Excellent. I love the confidence you have.
Exactly. Yeah, you have to.
And the people you are with, you have to. Yeah, I agree. Okay, so let's move to habits. You mentioned in the morning you would get your coffee, food, and maybe go to the gym.
Exactly.
Which is obviously a good habit. Can you tell me about a habit you're trying to adopt into your life, but you have been struggling with?
I would say getting up earlier and getting up the first time my alarm goes off. So I tend to sleep in a little bit more just because I'm up so late at night. It's difficult to get to bed as fast as I used to be able to get to bed. But I would say getting up in the morning and getting up, you know, the first time my alarm goes off, and just setting the precedent for that day that, you know, you can't really, you don't let things slide, you know, when you set the goal the night before to get up at a specific time, get up. And that's another thing that's difficult. It's like, I don't have to be anywhere at any one time in the morning. I don't have to report anywhere, like, I'm not late if I'm not there by 8. So knowing that in your head, it makes it a little bit easier to not get up as early or sleep in or as soon as the alarm. But I'll say that's one habit that I'm looking to break is getting up in the morning when I say I'm going to get up in the morning the night before.
So what is not early? What time do you get up in the morning? I need to ask.
Yeah, it's a good question. It fluctuates, and it kind of depends on like what I was doing the night before. But for I'm up from anywhere as early as about 6 in the morning to as late as 8 in the morning.
To as late as 8?
Yeah.
Oh, man, I thought you were actually going to say late. I woke up at 9:30 this morning.
I mean, that's nice. So, nothing wrong with that.
But I was also up till, yeah, almost 3 in the morning working. So, and just I just happened to be in it at that point, and I just wanted to keep doing it, and it was good. So
I completely agree. Yeah, I did the same thing. When I get into a project, I can't stop like halfway through or three quarters of the way through. I have to be there until the end.
Yeah, and sometimes you're just kind of in that zone, right?
Exactly. Your night goes into 3 a.m., yeah.
Okay, well, this, I don't know if this is habits, but I read in your bio that you are universally feared by to-do lists. So does this mean that you structure your day like that, like within a to-do list, and then you just bang them off, or how do you do this?
So yeah, this kind of goes back to the way that I look at different projects and things like that. So every day I have a to-do list that I organize the things that absolutely have to get done today. And then they're just ordered in priority. And I'll start at the top and knock my way down to the bottom. And no matter what happens or how long something takes, that the last task on the to-do list for that day is going to get done regardless. Some days it may end at 4, some days it may end at 3 a.m. I can't stop in the middle. I have to get all the way through. I just don't. It's something weird with the way that I'm wired, but I have to get absolutely everything done. I cannot stop in the middle of something.
When do you set this to-do list? The night before or in the morning?
I set the to-do list in the morning. So we do a thing called, this is another kind of cool thing that we do since we all work remote. So we do a thing in the morning called, it's called stand-ups. And we all just get to do a Google Hangout where the six of us are all on video. And we go through and we say what we want to accomplish that day, what the roadblocks are to accomplishing those things. And then we go over what we wanted to get done yesterday and give an update on whether or not we completed it or we didn't complete it. So pretty much right before that stand-up every morning is when I set my to-do list for the day. I tell everybody what my to-do list is, what I'm going to get done, what my roadblocks are. And if my roadblocks are something that somebody else on the team can help me out with, then they help me out with it. If not, then I go into the to-do list as is, and then the next day I report on my previous day's to-do list and where I left off, which obviously I have to finish every single time, and then set my to-do list for the next day. So it's set in the morning.
Nice. You guys are awesome. It sounds like...
It's cool, man. It's fun. I mean, it wasn't always like this. This is just something we've kind of learned as we've gone, that this is the best way that we work. This is this is the best way that we work. It may not be for everybody, but it's the most efficient way for us to operate, the most lean. There's really no expense. Everybody works more they want, and it's efficient. It's nice.
That's awesome. Okay, Connor, we're sitting here 1 year from today, and we're celebrating the amazing year that Misto Box had. Can you tell me what you guys did to accomplish that?
In terms of like financial figures or?
It depends on what your metrics are. Every company has a different metric, but if you have a vision for the next year and what you're trying to accomplish, what is that? So that we can sit here a year from now and be like, you guys did it. Well played.
I would say, so a year from today, we're just launching a brand new website and kind of pivoting the way that the model works. So there's going to be a lot of work that's going into not only migrating customers, but acquiring new ones. And I would say that a year from today, our goal would be to have 10,000 active Misto Box customers with a churn rate of less than 5%. So churn for the most part, on top of acquiring customers and the cost that we're paying to acquire those customers, churn retention is the most important metric that we look at. We want people to, when they sign up for Misto Box, they're going to be with us forever. The only reason that they would cancel or not want Misto Box anymore is if there's some health-related reason, whether it be, doctor's orders or they're pregnant, but for the most part, or they just stop drinking coffee in general for one reason or another. But we want there to be no reason that anybody would ever want to end the service. We want it to be that good. We want it to be absolutely perfect. We only want people to cancel because of health-related reasons or they're just done drinking coffee. So 10,000 customers, direct answer, 10,000 customers, active customers, and a retention rate of greater than 95%, so a churn rate of less than 5.
Awesome. I think with your vision and your organization, I think you guys will achieve this. So we've talked a lot about you and your business has come into it here and there. Can you tell us and earlier you even said you want to remain focused on what it is you do at Misto Box. Can you tell everyone now what Misto Box does and why they should look into it?
Yeah. So what Misto Box does is we make amazing coffee easy and accessible. So the way the new system is going to work and the new website that I mentioned earlier is every customer, you basically come to our website and you build a coffee profile. It's almost going to be like a Netflix for coffee. So based off of your coffee profile, we're going to know exactly what types of coffees you're going to like and exactly the types of coffees you're not going to like. And we're going to know how much coffee you're consuming on a daily or a weekly basis. And our goal is to send you an awesome coffee on a recurring basis that makes sure you never run out. So we want to make it easy. And we want to make it approachable, accessible, and unintimidating. Because so many people these days are intimidated by, walking into a coffee shop and ordering something, getting scolded by the barista. They don't know, what the terms are and what they should say. People are intimidated and it makes good coffee inaccessible. So we want to make it extremely accessible and extremely easy by providing just the easiest way to get it and an awesome customer experience with awesome customer service. So you just come on, you tell us what you like and how frequently you want it. And, you know, the rest is up to us. So it's almost like putting your coffee on autopilot is kind of what we call it.
Nice. And Netflix for coffee. I love that.
Yeah.
As soon as you said that, I was like, I get it.
Exactly.
There it is.
I mean, yeah, we're going to be able, you're going to be able to come online, create a profile. We're going to start sending you coffees. You can pick the frequency in which you receive coffees down to the day, anywhere from one day you receive coffee every day or you receive a coffee every 40 days and anywhere in between. You choose how frequently you want to send you coffees. And then as you come back online and let us know what you thought about the coffees we send you, the system gets a little bit smarter. It starts to optimize the profile that you have, and the coffees that get sent from that point forward are going to be more optimized for what you like, really.
Nice. And the Canadian in me wants to know if you deliver to Canada.
Yeah, so we do deliver to Canada. It is a little bit more. We're working on some different options right now to try and get more affordable shipping, but like through the postal service, there honestly is just no way to get a package to Canada much cheaper than, like, at the weights that we're doing, like much cheaper than $10. Whereas in the States, it's like $4 to $5.
Exactly. Yeah.
So we do ship to Canada, but there is a little bit of an increase in cost.
Cool. But you ship here because I love coffee. So
we do.
I'm going to look into it. So that's mistobox.com.
Correct.
Connor, thank you so much for joining us on the show. I really appreciate your time, and just keep doing what you're doing, man, because it's awesome.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, John. I appreciate it.
Connor, thank you so much for this conversation. It was a lot of fun, and you're a really, really smart guy, and you and your co-founder, Samantha, are doing some really impressive stuff. And yeah, I look forward to trying out your coffee as well as I hope everyone else does too. But there was that one point in the conversation, wasn't there? That one point where Connor said something. Did you hear it? Did you get it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
Unless it's something that you're going to be the best at, outsource it. You know, all printing, we're not good at printing, so we shouldn't be printing. You know, don't spend money on things unless it's absolutely necessary, unless it's something you think it's going to, you know, bring immense value to the business, and it is within your core competency.
And that's the hack. Beautifully said, Connor. And I think that there's kind of two things here that are really important. So he starts off by saying, only do things that you're really good at and outsource the rest, which is fine. And we all understand that to a certain degree. So that's not really the hack. I think the hack is what he says later, where he says that we need to not spend money where we don't need to spend money. And I think this is something that a lot of businesses, well, it's proven. This is where a lot of businesses fail, where they don't, where they start to spend money in a way that they think might save them money or that they think is just necessary. It's like, it's the cost of doing business, and it's not necessarily the cost of doing business. When you're working online, there's amazing tools and things that are available for free. And it seems everywhere I go on Facebook and stuff, people are all just like, oh, did you get this new thing? Especially Black Friday just passed, right? So everyone's like buying all this stuff that they absolutely don't need. One thing, I think it's a distraction, because your business is working and you really just need to put your ass in the chair and work. Most of the time, you don't need a new app or a new tool to make things easier. Just do the work. And it's just absolutely key. And I used to not think this way, but my business partner, Bill, when we worked into like Velocity Page and stuff, it's just he has a better concept of like things we need to spend our money on and things we don't. And with Hack the Entrepreneur, I got to hire an editor for the show. He's amazing. I got to hire an assistant now who does a ton of work for me, but I didn't hire those people before I got revenue. It was absolutely key to me that I was not going to run a deficit for this show just because I thought that was the cost of doing business, because I think it's silly and it's dumb, and then it makes me make bad choices. I got offered with sponsorships for this show. One thing before I was ready for sponsorships, and I thought the show was ready for sponsorships, but also ones that weren't congruent with my message, ones that I didn't believe in. Now I have FreshBooks. FreshBooks is something I use, something I truly believe in, and I use in my business all the time, and it's also Canadian. I'm Canadian. That's pretty cool to me. That was kind of a neat, just cool thing that was very true and very well aligned with my message and what I'm trying to do with Hack the Entrepreneur. But if I had been spending money for months ahead of time, I couldn't have made the choice that was the best choice for my business. I would have had to just make a choice to bring in revenue because I had already taken on expenses. And I don't think that's true. And I love the way Connor says that is just, he struggled with this one. He struggled with the fact that his biggest mistake was buying this printer for $12,000 they're still paying for and they don't even use it. And it's just because he thought it's a cost of doing business. I'll pay this money up front and then it'll, but it's like, no, it's not really. Because then he just actually got a little bit creative and like, oh, actually there's this printing company who will just do it for me. So I love that, Connor. And I just appreciate so much the fact, Connor, that you even just kind of looked inside for that really hard mistake you made. And you seemed a bit apprehensive kind of telling it. And I'm so happy you did, because those are the things that we need to know. Those are the things that we are looking for. And those are the mistakes that we make. We make them all the time. And it doesn't matter who we are. It's just something that happens and it's a part of business. But he learned from it and he's grown from it. And him and Mistobox are better for it. So thank you. Again. So such an amazing time. You guys have no idea how much this means to me that you're all out there listening and I am having so much fun. So thank you, thank you, thank you. Stop by the site, hacktheentrepreneur.com. You're going to see a nice picture of me right at the top. That's for me. We removed the background, but that's for me in the Tokyo subway a few months back. And my daughter actually took that picture. It's just a lot of fun. Get on the mail list. I'm sending out an email once a week to everyone. And it's the best stuff I've come up with for my business. What's going on with Hack the Entrepreneur, all that sort of thing. And that allows you to reply to me and just, we can have a conversation. It's two-way, this whole thing. So I hope you're enjoying it as much as I am. This has been great. Again, we're back Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, three times a week now. Until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.